You're listening to KCBS In-Depth.
Really, in order to find quality care, you often have to be on a wait list that's months long.
The people, places, and issues the Bay Area is talking about.
The aggressive advocates who were looking to overrule Roe for so long, they really had no idea of the consequences they might be opening up.
In this case, there very well may be charges that are appropriate. For example, trying to obstruct an official proceeding of Congress, right? That is unlawful.
This is KCBS In-Depth.
In the past few years, many of our conversations about transit in the Bay Area have been about how the various agencies are struggling with funding shortfalls, lower ridership, and the possibility of service cuts as fiscal cliffs loom. Now, it's no secret that the COVID pandemic played a huge role in pushing transit agencies to the brink, but the after effects presented a question to us all. What will it take to ensure that transit in the Bay Area survives? That's a big question, of course, and a financial lifeline to the tune of around $747 million is planned to be split up among several agencies. But the real saving grace will be getting more people onto those buses and onto those trains. Welcome to KCBS In-Depth, broadcasting throughout the Bay Area and streaming on the Odyssey app. I'm Mary Hughes. So in these tough times that seem to keep on going, are we seeing any improvement? And is a recovery to pre-pandemic numbers still possible? For the San Francisco Municipal Transportation Agency, the answer just might be yes. So to give us an update on all things SFMTA, I'm joined by Jeff Tumlin, Director of Transportation with the San Francisco Municipal Transportation Agency. Jeff, thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me, Murray.
As I mentioned, we do hear a lot about how more people are still working from home. And, you know, and if they're going anywhere, maybe they're not using transit the way they used to. They're just hopping in the car. But is that what you're seeing right now when it comes to ridership?
Yes and no is the short version. So we're seeing a divergence in pattern. Obviously, downtown San Francisco has changed a lot as a result from of work from home. We've got over 30 million square feet of empty office space downtown. So not only are those people not taking transit, those commuters are just not coming in at all. So our downtown ridership is significantly down, just like BART's ridership is. But we're seeing a very different set of patterns elsewhere in the city. And in fact, we're seeing record-breaking transit ridership in our neighborhoods where we've invested in making transit fast, frequent, reliable, clean, and safe.
Well, and that was some of the, you know, data I've been looking over leading up to this conversation. It does show that there has been somewhat of a lift for transit agencies in that they are seeing more riders right now. You know, what do you think is the reason why they're starting to come back, maybe in ways that we weren't seeing that quickly, you know, once the heart of the pandemic seemed to be over?
Yeah, so there's two things in play. One is, you know, San Francisco is a classic boom-bust economy, and we went through a new kind of bust through COVID, and we're starting to see the signs of a new boom cycle where older companies are giving up space downtown and commercial rents are dropping dramatically. And as a result of that, new businesses are forming, businesses that want their folks to come together in person in an office where there is abundant places to go for a drink after work and entertainment and access to creative partners. So we're seeing a slow but steady resurgence in the downtown. But the thing that is more interesting that we're seeing is how people in San Francisco neighborhoods are taking transit like they've never taken it before. And so lines like the 49 Van Ness, where we invested famously in transit lanes on Van Ness, year over year, our Van Ness line is up 130% weekdays, and it's at 134% of pre-COVID ridership September to September. This was beyond our wildest expectations. And it's coming from a whole lot of different factors. A lot of it is high school kids. Like, basically all middle schoolers and high schoolers are apparently taking Muni, not only to get to school, but to get to Japantown or to Stonestown or whatever place that cool young people are going these days. We're also seeing people increasingly just taking Muni to run errands or to go shopping or for recreation, in part because we've made our main lines more frequent and more reliable than they have been in recent memory. So we're seeing an uptick in people transferring, because before, I mean, you know, if I needed to get to Golden Gate Park, for me, it requires a transfer. And so I wouldn't do that before because, you know, who knows when the next bus is coming. But now it's just so easy because of the improvements in reliability that I'm actually willing to change buses in order to get where I want to go. And that's made neighborhood-to-neighborhood travel in San Francisco a lot easier to do than it has been in the 30 years that I've lived in San Francisco.
Well, and I like that you you brought up reliability, you know, being a factor in all of this, because as anyone can say, especially if they are, you know, traveling within San Francisco, you know, reliability is huge when we're talking about transportation.
That's right. It's everything. It's what makes transportation convenient. And, you know, if I'm not certain how long it's going to take to get from A to B, I'm going to take the mode that is certain, whether that's driving my own car or taking Uber or Waymo. So by improving reliability, we've made Muni work for people that it never worked for before. I mean, when I first moved to San Francisco a long time ago and lived in the Mission District, the 14 Mission was scheduled to come every 5 minutes. But instead of one bus every 5 minutes, we got five buses all together every half hour. That didn't work. And so during COVID, when we didn't know how many of our operators were going to be in quarantine, we were forced to abandon our bus schedules and instead turned on a technology that we'd had for a long time but had never used. That's called headway management. And that's a really low-tech tool that our operators use in order to space themselves out evenly. So whether we had, you know, five operators available on the line or 15, we could deliver service that spread the buses out evenly. And we've held on to that technology even as COVID has eased. And what that has done is dramatically improved reliability.
Well, and I think this is something that a lot of people, transit agencies or not, have been grappling with since the COVID pandemic, is how to rethink the structure of how they're doing things and how it can best serve the public in whatever way that it does. And, you know, hearing it all sounds very positive what's going on right now as far as SFMTA. How does that compare with the rest of the country from your perspective? You know, because this is a challenging area, San Francisco, when we are having conversations about the bounce back of the city.
That's right. So we're fortunate at Muni that we're primarily a bus system. And so we have completely rebuilt our entire transit system over a dozen times since the beginning of the pandemic. And right now, every quarter, we're looking at the new travel pattern data and rearranging our transit service to better and better serve the changing patterns in San Francisco. And we can do that because we have this flexible bus system. So we have actually had to reduce a lot of the service that we had been providing to the downtown And we've pushed that service into our neighborhoods where the service is better than it was pre-COVID. And that in turn has resulted in ridership increase. If you're a fixed rail system like BART, you've got less flexibility. BART can't reroute its trains. We have had the good fortune of being able to make more adjustments than other rail agencies around the country. We have the misfortune of arguably having the greatest volume of former transit commuters who are now working from home of potentially any city in the world. And that is a big challenge, not only for our financial models, but making sure that transit is still there as office employment comes back, either in the form of, you know, existing workers coming back into the office or new businesses forming in cheaper office space. There is no downtown San Francisco recovery without a thriving BART.
There you go. You kind of hit on, you know, one of the bigger challenges that the city is facing right now when it comes to this conversation. And of course, I mentioned earlier that, you know, there is a financial, kind of life raft that's being floated out to agencies. The Metropolitan Transit Commission is going to be allocating a certain amount of funds in state and regional funds over the next 2 years. And Muni is going to benefit from some of that. But there are added stipulations to what agencies are having to do in order for this, you know, money to kind of work for them. Can you discuss a little bit about this scenario and what Muni will have to take on?
Yes, we are so incredibly grateful to the state government, to both the state legislature, as well as the governor, and in addition to the Metropolitan Transportation Commission for allocating additional relief funding to keep transit afloat here in the Bay Area while we work on a longer term solution and while downtown recovers. So Muni is getting about $300 million, which buys us a substantial amount of additional time to help with recovery and a longer term plan. And as you said, it does come with stipulations, which we firmly supported. So the stipulations include making sure that we are doing our part to make the entire transit system for the region look like it's one integrated system from a passenger perspective. So that means making timed transfers work. It means eliminating transfer penalties as you change, you know, buses and trains among different operators. It means coming up with one consistent mapping and wayfinding system. And it includes investing in some of the really innovative programs that the region is leading, like BayPass, which allows institutions and employers to buy universal transit passes for their folks that provide one ticket for all operators in the entire 9-county Bay Area. We are eager to make the transit system look and feel like it's one single integrated system because San Francisco is the most transit dependent city in the entire region. So regional integration really benefits us as a city and us as a transit agency. The other thing that MTC and the state have conditioned is making sure that we are getting better fare compliance. And this is super important to us because we're dependent upon transit rider fare revenue in order to deal with our own financial crisis. So we are working on a whole lot of investments, including more transit fare inspectors, but also creating more transit fare instruments to make it easier to pay. So at Muni, in addition to being able to use your Clipper card, if you're going to any event at Chase Arena, your event ticket is also your Muni pass. If you're going to Outside Lands, your ticket to Outside Lands is also your Muni pass. This week, we also unveiled a new version of Muni Mobile, which is an online app that allows you to pay your muni fare. So we have many, many ways that our passengers can pay their fares, either by tagging their Clipper card or by using Muni Mobile or one of our many, many pass programs. So those are the things that we're investing in order to make the system work better for our riders.
KCBS's In-Depth will return after this break.
I was curious, you know, noticing that, of course, that was a kind of a catch associated with Muni and with BART to take on, you know, fare evasion issues. And it sounds like you've got plans and things in place that can make this work for everyone. But how much of an issue has it been when it comes to fare evasion?
Yeah, it looks like fare compliance has resulted in about a 10 percentage point drop in our fare revenue. But we're also trying to tease apart to what degree is our fare revenue losses due to, for example, providing free Muni to all kids to be able to use Muni in order to get to school. So we're conducting a very detailed analysis right now that includes looking at all of the sources for, you know, who exactly is paying their fare and who's not and why, so that we can develop programs in order to make sure that everyone can pay their fair share, but also to recognize that most people don't actually need to tag on with Clipper in order to pay their fare, which is something that many of our riders don't understand.
It'll be interesting to see what the details of this this deep dive that you're doing will result in and what kind of answers you'll be able to kind of derive from it. So we, you know, talked about, you know, what Muni is doing to address fare evasion issues. But let's talk about public safety. What is it that Muni is doing to address those issues? Because that's, bar none, probably what I hear about the most is a lack of feeling safe when someone's on transit.
Yes, this is the number one concern that we hear from our riders, are concerns about safety and security. And so for us, it's really important to parse that information into all of its constituent parts so that we can direct our resources to solving the real and underlying problems. So from a just a reported crime standpoint, crime on Muni is at a near historic low. It is one quarter of what it was a decade ago. That said, we know that people's concerns are real. And part of it has to do with the increase in untreated mental health and addiction issues on the streets that we know about in San Francisco and that the mayor's office and the DA and the police are working hard at addressing. But those street issues find their way onto Muni. And oftentimes people are uncomfortable sharing a ride with somebody who's experiencing homelessness. So we are addressing the situation in several ways. We've taken a very strong stance at training our entire workforce in de-escalation training and leading with compassion. And that has resulted in what we're seeing as some very positive results in terms of, for example, reducing operator assaults. We have led by hiring a team of transit ambassadors that ride throughout the system who focus on helping people just be chill, de-escalating things, and knowing when to hand off to the San Francisco Police Department. We've also invested really heavily in video cameras. We have at least 11 video cameras on every transit vehicle. We record audio. We have up to 100 cameras in our stations. And as a result of this incredibly high quality video, we have an extraordinarily high rate of identifying, apprehending, prosecuting, and convicting criminals on Muni. Basically, if you commit a crime on Muni, you are going to jail, thanks to our strong partnership with the police and with the district attorney. And then we're also investing a lot of work in programs to support, you know, particularly women, Asian Americans, other people of color who have particular safety concerns on Muni. And we've launched our Muni Safe campaign that is a holistic campaign that relies in part on education and information, but also on training of our staff. You know, we've got a lot of work to do, but we're seeing very positive signs as a result of our current efforts.
You know, so much of what we're talking about here, you know, beyond, you know, the immediacy of how things are looking right now and, you know, what's being done to lure people back to transit, you know, are these questions of the survival of the transit agencies, of the whole system. And I know that there are people who think that the whole transit system should be rethought. You know, there's some like transit-centric neighborhoods or streamlining the agencies. And, you know, people want to factor in, you know, how can we make neighborhoods more reliant on transit when we're talking about climate change and things like that. So on these like bigger scale issues that I think kind of will keep cropping up in people's minds, what kind of answers do you have in regards to stuff like that?
Yeah, well, you know, we at Muni are all transit riders, almost all of us take Muni in order to get here to work. So we are very invested in making Muni work better. For us, the biggest obstacle is really the funding base. The United States is unique among developed countries in that we require most transit funding to be raised locally. Almost all of Muni's funding is, you know, it's our transit fares, it's our parking fees, and it is a fixed set aside that we get from the San Francisco General Fund. In every other country in the world, state and federal governments provide a substantial contribution to making transit work. And if we want to get serious about making transit work and dealing with climate and congestion, we need to rethink how we're investing in transit at the state level. In New York, for example, the state government realized that New York City transit had been suffering structural deficits long before COVID, and that the state needed to step in with not just a one-time bailout, but with a permanent contribution to make sure that New York City can continue to invest in transit, since that is the primary way that New Yorkers get, you know, wherever they're going. So in the, you know, I think ultimately, if we want a transit system to work, the primary obstacle is financial. But in addition, I think that all of us operators need to be less parochial. One of the interesting side effects of COVID is every single general manager of, you know, all of the larger operators in the Bay Area, we've been meeting every single Monday morning at 9 for almost 4 years now. And as a result of that, we have not only been able to respond better to COVID, but we've realized that we're all in this together, and that in order to get the resources that we need in order to do better for our customers, we need to listen to our customers. And our customers are asking for really clear things. They want transit to be fast, frequent, reliable, clean, and safe. And they want all of the operations in the region to look like it's one integrated system. I don't think our riders care who actually runs the buses and the trains. They just want to make it all work together as if it were one. So from my perspective, the form of any government agency follows from finance. We don't need, in fact, I think it would be very harmful to try to create one transit agency for the region. It's perfectly fine to have multiple transit agencies, but we need a team at the region that is staffed to help us work together well. And that's exactly what we've been doing. Just last month, the Metropolitan Transportation Commission hired their first regional transit network manager. This is a person whose job it is to help us work together. As operators, we are now actually seconding, we're actually loaning staff to each other and to the region to do the critical staff work to integrate our services. And, you know, to do the work, for example, one of the things that we discovered, we were wondering, why is it so hard to maintain timed transfers across operators? And we realized that we update our schedules based upon operator signup schedules built into our labor union contracts. And this is a good thing. Like, we want our workforce to have a predictable life. And so we don't want to change our bus schedules because that impacts how our workforce, you know, negotiates, you know, school drop-off with their spouses. And so there's very specific times that we change our schedules. And the contracts for each of the agencies were perfectly misaligned so that we couldn't maintain time transfers perpetually because we were adjusting our schedules out of sync with each other. So now we've got actually somebody who can help us as we go through labor negotiations, make sure that we're aligning our schedule change time with each other and with our workers so that we can build and maintain time transfers. I mean, it's a very nerdy example of the critical staff work that's necessary in order to deliver an integrated system. And that's what we're committed to working on.
Nerdy it may be, but I think it's the nuts and bolts, you know, that help us better understand what's going on when we are talking about transit. And what I'm gathering here from what you've been saying just now is it's about a commitment to being invested into the transit system. That, of course, financially, that's a huge part of it, but a commitment to seeing how it can evolve. And so would you say that eventually we're going to see a new kind of way that the transit system exists in San Francisco and the Bay Area?
Absolutely. And I think really what our commitment is focusing on what our customers need, really listening to the experience that our customers have, not just moving around within our individual agency, but moving around the region and working hard to make the connections that are necessary so that people can get wherever they need to go in the region. You know, and I think that's particularly true for us here in San Francisco because so many of our workers and our tourists our visitors come from elsewhere in the city. And I want to make sure that it's really, really easy to transfer from BART to Muni or from Golden Gate or SamTrans or Caltrain to Muni and that our visitors feel really welcome into the system and into San Francisco.
Thanks for listening for KCBS and In Depth. I'm Mary Hughes.
You've been listening to KCBS In Depth. Get every episode by subscribing on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and other podcast platforms. Visit kcbsradio.com for more news and interviews. We are the Bay Area's news station, KCBS.